one of our periodic Tomlin takes, and we're taking advantage of rock star Greg Tomlin here, because when it comes to quality TV, he's on top of it. And when it comes to quality TV, I'm a know-nothing because I kind of give it the office. I mean, I did three screenings this week, actually, for movies that we're going to review. But apparently there's a gigantic TV event through Netflix about The Last Tsar of Russia. And how much of it have you seen so far?
I've only seen episode one, but it impacted me so heavily that I wanted to talk about it, give a recommendation with a word of warning. Look, it is the summer season. We're looking for entertainment offerings. You've suffered through a lot of subpar films recently. My wife and I tend to peruse Netflix on a nightly basis to see what's out there. I couldn't get her to watch this one with me because it's historical in nature. But like you said, it's called The Last Tsars, and it's about the life and times of Tsar Nicholas II, who was the last Romanov who reigned over Russia over, I think, a family dynasty that lasted over 300 years.
Yeah, the Romanovs ruled from the time of Shakespeare and Queen Elizabeth right up until 1917, which is an incredible span and a very, very bloody and nightmarish span often in Russian history.
Well, and for those people who are fascinated with history and simultaneously the world of like Game of Thrones, this was a real-life, earth-shattering Game of Thrones time in human history because it was the end of an era, and it's sort of shot like Game of Thrones, where it's hyper-sexualized, there's a lot of violence, the acting is superb, it's very overly dramatic, but it works to a good effect. And Michael, what's...
When you say it's hyper-sexualized, yeah. I sort of know these people as historical figures.
Right.
Who's engaged in some of that hypersexuality? Is it Rasputin?
So exactly right, yes.
Right, and
it
who's goes the mad monk?
Rasputin is heavily featured in the series and some of his bizarre sexual practices and sort of his mysticism, but he is one of the most captivating figures of the 20th century as well. It depicts Tsar Nicholas and his wife after they get married. But what's also very interesting, Michael, you know how they have those PBS historical documentaries where they have very poor representations of Alexander Hamilton and he's being quoted by some British actor and
right.
It's B-level production? Well, this, like I said, looks like Game of Thrones, and about 8 minutes into the series, they cut to real-life historians amidst the drama. And what's sort of off-putting but works on some level is you see the drama in real time, but then you hear these modern-day historians talk over the action that you're seeing on screen. But when it gets kind of awkward is when you see Rasputin indulging in some of his more bizarre sexual practices and you hear historians talking over it. You see what I mean? Because there's like a lot of nudity, and it's sort of awkward. So I get what they're trying to do. It's sort of a new way of portraying historical events that I thought was worth noting, and I want to recommend it to listeners because this era of Russia doesn't get nearly enough attention, and this is one way to kind of go back and rediscover that part of history that I, like I said, was so earth-shattering. But Michael, why do you think it is that there haven't been a lot of TV or film productions of this time in human history in this part of the world?
There's actually been more than about the other revolution. I mean, because
or Nazi Germany or Imperial Japan, even
Nazi Germany, there's been plenty. I mean, we've had lots and lots. Nazis are, and in fact, there's a saying in the book business: if you're able to put a swastika on a cover of a book,
cha-ching!
It actually helps. Yes, that's considered to be a positive thing. And yes, people are fascinated by Nazis. There's also been a great deal of big movie coverage about the war, the Pacific War, and the Japanese Empire. What there hasn't been, and I think it's the far bloodier experience in Russia and in China.
And in China, right.
Partially, and nothing in China. I mean, which is the bloodiest revolution in all of human history.
Oh, and they probably over 20 million dead bodies?
China, 75 million.
Jeez.
At least. At least.
Because of famine,
because
concentration camps.
Because of this complicated three-part war, because it was the communists fighting the nationalists, fighting the Japanese. They were both supposed to be fighting the Japanese, who were unbelievably murderous in their occupation of China. And it's just, I think Stalin is quoted as saying that one death can be a tragedy, but a million deaths is a statistic. Or he may have said 1,000 deaths. But you're talking about millions of deaths here. Over a
long period of time.
Correct. In Russia, what I hope that they would cover with the last czars is because part of what happened is that with the revolution, and I don't know how far you are in the
he just took over the reins of power. There was a coronation in the first episode, and thousands of people were trampled to death trying to go see him.
Because they were so excited, because the godlike power that was supposed to be invested
exactly,
in the czar.
The coronation was full of opulence and over-the-top display of wealth and power. And instead of Tsar Nicholas hearing about the dead bodies and going, okay, we need to call off the rest of the coronation, he goes out and parties against his better judgment. And that sort of creates some resentment that you can see brewing with the people. And I think he's had 4 kids right now, all girls, and he's trying to produce a male heir.
Right. And they go into the hemophilia problem with that family.
Right. And Rasputin is just about to get connected with the royal family.
Because of the hemophilia problem, the bleeder's disease. It's all such fascinating stuff.
Recommendation with word of warning.
Spoiler alert. There are a lot of people who die here. Now,
a lot
of course,
of murders.
Everybody who was alive in the early 20th century is kind of gone now. Certainly people who were crowned heads in 1917, which is when the Tsar was deposed. But what I hope for the series, Greg, is that they follow up after the Tsar is deposed and he and his family are murdered. And I don't think that's a spoiler
right.
alert because they all get murdered by the communists. That's when the killing really got bad. Because I know about that because my father's sisters, my father was born here in the United States after my grandmother, my father's mother, got here finally in 1924. But she was there for the revolution, for World War I, for the revolution, for the Civil War, and she lost 5 children who were basically starved to death at the time. And there were... This is before Stalin's deliberate hunger famine in Ukraine. In this earlier starvation in Ukraine, there are estimated 1.5 million people who starved to death at the heart of Europe.
Well, and say what you will about monarchies. We don't like them here in the United States of America. We threw off ours about 250 years ago. And thank God, by some American miracle, we have the Constitution and the system that we have now. But, you know, Tsar Nicholas, at least to an extent, kept some level of order.
Do you know where the word Tsar comes from?
No.
Caesar.
Oh,
that's how
there you go.
Like Kaiser. Kaiser is the same thing. They wanted to be latter-day Caesars.